Thank you. My name is John Snyder, and I'm a crop physiologist for the University of Georgia. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about thermotolerance today, more specifically thermotolerance plasticity. But first things first, when we talk about thermotolerance, it's how heat tolerant a given process is. So I'm going to start with photosynthesis here. I'm not going to break this entire graph down and discuss it, but this is some of the evidence that was presented by Salvucci and Krasbrenner, if I'm saying the name correctly, otherwise you can correct me afterwards. So, but what I want to show here is that, you know, there's basically sort of a debate in the literature indicating that Rubisco activase can account for photosynthetic inhibition above 35 degrees C in this moderately high temperature stress range. And then, of course, there were some follow-up papers indicating that electron transport is this limitation. But the main reason I have this graph up here is just to point something out. There's a threshold. There's this 35 degrees C threshold for cotton for net photosynthesis. Once you get above that temperature, leaf temperature, photosynthetic rates begin to decline. All right? That's the main thing that I wanted to point out here. All right, so why is a rattlesnake on a talk about cotton and heat tolerance and all of this stuff? So it's generally assumed that like this rattlesnake here, cotton and other plants are, they're ectothermic, they're poikilotherms, they're at the mercy of the environment, and because they can't get up and move, they're also eurothermal. They have a broad temperature range. They don't have narrow temperature dependencies. All right, well, work by Mahan, Upchurch, Burke, a number of authors has indicated, yes, they do have fairly narrow temperature ranges. And in fact, you can increase temperatures above the optimum for cotton, and it will maintain relatively cool leaf temperatures that are within that optimal temperature range. All right? So what they showed was as you increase air temperature all the way up to 40 degrees C, the most commonly observed leaf temperature was 27 degrees plus or minus 2 degrees C. All right? Now, what I think is interesting here is of all this data that was collected, leaf temperature never exceeded that 35 degree threshold, which again, that's interesting to me in that sense, and this was presented as evidence of limited homeothermy in cotton, and there was work done in other species as well. And then once you get below that 27 degree mark, leaf temperature is at the mercy of air temperature. It tracks air temperature really well. So why am I bringing that up? Well, I do a lot of heat stress work. So if cotton's never under heat stress, then how relevant is that, right? It's staying well below the air temperature. All right, and even further, for you fluorescence guys out there, right? I really like using chlorophyll fluorescence, but FVFM, if you track FVFM in response to temperature, and yes, I know this doesn't go all the way to 45, but this is very, a messy graph, but this one line right here, this is cotton, okay? As we increase leaf temperature, we only get a slight decline in FVFM, which is maximum quantum yield of photosystem 2, even at some really extreme temperatures. And further, in some of the studies that we have conducted in the field, if that plant is exposed to drought stress prior to your measurement time or heat or really high temperatures prior to your measurement time, photosystem 2 will acclimate and you will have really, really even higher thresholds than this. All right? So, again, it's one of these things that we use it a lot, but photosystem 2 is really, really tolerant. Okay? So when would temperatures like this become relevant if a plant is staying, if a plant is keeping those leaf temperatures within that optimal temperature range? I know this is from IDSO. What I want to point out is, yeah, there's a response of foliage temperature to vapor pressure deficit that's very predictable under well-watered conditions. Once you're under any level of drought stress, foliage temperatures will deviate from that well-watered baseline. So you can have leaf temperatures that are above air temperature. So if a plant is under drought stress and air temperature is around 40, and it's 2 degrees above that, that's 42 degrees. So all of a sudden these really high temperatures become relevant. Now, of course, you've got the confounding effects of drought stress and heat stress on top of each other, and so trying to separate that out can be tricky. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is yield stability, because there's some argument that thermal tolerance, plasticity, or abiotic stress tolerance, plasticity influences yield stability. So there's this regression method for anyone in here that's got a sort of a breeding background. I don't, but they'll be familiar with Everhart and Russell. Essentially, here's how this works. So you don't necessarily know everything that happened in a given yield environment. You know something happened to bring yields below or above average. All right. So for a given environment, given location, given set of conditions, the average yield for all cultivars in that situation is the environmental mean. You subtract the grand mean from that and you end up with this environmental index. So negative numbers mean what? They mean that yield was below average in that situation. Positive numbers mean that yield was above average in that environment. All right? So you, without knowing everything that happened in that environment, you can assess stability, environmental stability of a given cultivar. The slope of the line is an indication of stability. So the steeper the slope, the more responsive to environment a given cultivar is, or the less stable that yield is. All right, and then I'm paraphrasing here that there's been some suggestion that genotypes that have greater phenotypic plasticity in response to abiotic stress or other factors will also exhibit greater yield stability. All right, so to address this possibility, now I told you when does this heat tolerance thing become relevant? When do I think it becomes relevant anyway? And I think this is under water limited conditions. There's a poster that Daryl over here, my PhD student, presented yesterday. It's an irrigation scheduling paper. Well, we had five different irrigation treatments. We had the University of Georgia checkbook method, which is essentially a well-watered control, dry land conditions, and then three plant-based triggers. Those are pre-dawn water potential, measured 3 days per week, and whenever a given threshold was crossed, irrigation was triggered. There's a lot more details associated with this, but we were able to generate differences in plant water status throughout the season. Okay? And you can see out here that, you know, we've got some really well-watered strips through here, and we've got some that are under some sort of drought limitation there. All right, so now what about assessing heat tolerance? How do we assess how plastic heat tolerance is? Yes, in controlled environments, you can do this. You can assess heat tolerance this way. If I've got plants growing out in the field, how do I assess how heat tolerant that plant is? We need to apply a number to a given leaf or plot or whatever the case may be, a given cultivar under a given set of conditions, say that this plant is this heat tolerant. All right? So the way I've done this, and yes, I'm using fluorescence despite my discussion earlier. I'm using fluorescence. Take leaf samples from the field that have been dark adapted. Collect them during pre-dawn hours so they are fully dark adapted. And I use this really large thermal gradient. There's a thermocouple, probably a millimeter from that wet filter paper there, and expose these leaf discs to a range of temperatures, essentially an increasing temperature. All right. Now, to get at that one number that we apply to everything that we measure, I fit a curve to the temperature response, this maximum quantum yield response to temperature, and the temperature causing a 15% decline in FVFM from the optimum is referred to as T15. So that's going to be my measure of heat tolerance that I apply throughout the talk. Okay, so that's the number that I use to assess heat tolerance. So here's just some water potential data. It took a lot of time to collect this data, so I had to present it. I think there's about 100 hours of work here. So anyway, this is the pre-dawn water potential throughout the season. You can see the various thresholds. Ultimately, when these thresholds were crossed, irrigation was triggered as well. So anyway, so we did in fact this year in Georgia. Last year, it wasn't too exciting. We got a lot of rainfall. This year, we had about a three-week period without any rain at all. And so we started to see some differences. Those arrows indicate our sample times. All right. Here's some water potential data from each sample time. You can see treatment. So one is the checkbook. Two here. This is our negative 0.5 megapascal trigger. And they're essentially the same throughout the growing season relative to each other. These are our well-watered treatments. And you can see on certain dates, those sample dates, we had some separation in water potential for the these three, uh, well, the negative 0.7, negative 0.9, and the dry land triggers. All right. Air temperature, just so you have an average air temperature on each date. So on July 10th and July 26th, we were below that 35 degree threshold. August 8th, I believe it was up around 38, 39 degrees C on that date. All right. Leaf temperature. Again, if you look at the well water, these two bars here on each one of these dates, yes, we had higher leaf temperatures on August 8th, but they were still below that 35 degree threshold unless we were under water limited conditions. All right, so heat tolerance. You can see some variation. There's obvious variation out here in heat tolerance. So on July 26th, where we didn't have high air temperatures, you see that heat tolerance was greater in those water limited conditions. All right, so down to what we were talking about. If you can regress any given parameter on an environmental index and see how stable it is, right? So, for a given cultivar, and this is where I'm getting to the cultivar effects here. So, Fibromax 1944 here, the open circles, had a much, I don't say lower, smaller, what the best approach is. It's not as steep. Thermotolerance was not as plastic in response to environment. These slopes were significantly different. And if you look at 499, it was much more plastic in response to environment. All right. So if you look up here, look at one of these. So this is over 50. We had to extrapolate slightly beyond the data there, about a degree, because I assumed 50 would do it. But anyway, we couldn't get those leaf temperatures, quantum yields to drop 15%, even at 50 degrees. So again, very responsive to environment. So if we're, you know, using that logic that was sort of presented early on, that ought to be the most yield stable under those water-limited conditions. And that's, in fact, what we see, that those slopes are different as well, that the lower slope or the less responsive to yield environment is the 499 variety. Now, one cultivar to another. I'll have to get out of here real quick, I know. So evidence for homeothermy, yes, the leaf temperatures were below the threshold. Heat tolerance acclimation, I think the evidence was fairly strong there. Thermotolerance plasticity promotes yield stability. In our one cultivar to another comparison, sure, we need a lot more cultivars to really make that statement. What's the mechanism? It's not that it's promoting photosynthetic stability under those drought conditions. Now, what's the mechanism? I think that's an interesting question by itself. Is it that allowing electrons to keep moving through photosystem 2 is preventing any sort of long-term damage once the stress is relieved? Maybe. I don't know. We have a lot of data on this study. But anyway, what about the utility of fluorescence-based methods for assessing heat tolerance? We can measure heat tolerance in the field, and we can assess how plastic that response is for field-grown plants. So with that, I don't know what kind of time we have, but take any questions you have.
Any questions? We have 2 minutes for questions. Okay, then it's time, John. Okay.